Joining me in the studio today, I'm lucky enough to have the author, Patricia Murphy, and she's going to be chatting about her latest children's book, The Irish Civil War, 1922-23, Ava's Diary. So welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you so much, Paula. It's always an honour to be on Near FM, as I am a Northsider myself, born, bred and buttered.
That's what we like to hear. That's what we like to hear. Local girl makes good. So let's start off talking about this particular book. What can you tell us about the storyline?
Well, Ava's Diary is about a young Irish-American girl who's 12 years old, and she comes back to Dublin with her mother, who's going through a terrible separation with Ava's father. And so she lands in Ireland like an alien. She doesn't know anything about Irish history. She's not very happy about moving back to Dublin, because her grandmother's gone, her uncle has gone travelling, her uncle Keith has moved to London, and she finds herself in the middle of nowhere, in her eyes, living somewhere like Fairview, just near the coast, and she's kind of feeling very marooned. One of her teachers suggests it might be nice for her to research her the local history of her area, because she ill-advisedly said she liked history when she was asked what she liked, and she regrets it. So so she has an assignment to write a history essay over the summer. But luckily for her, she's in a house that has lots of old relics from the past, and she's on a first floor flat, and she finds a cache of letters, and this cache of letters turns out to be all about the Civil War.
Right.
And it turns out that the letters are written by a medical student called Molly, who readers if have read Molly's Diary will be familiar with Molly, because it is actually Molly now grown up a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's now a medical student at Trinity College, and the letters are by her, and they're all about the Civil War. And but there's a mystery at the heart of it, because Ava also finds the sliver of an emerald, a little emerald brooch. And as she begins to find out about this brooch, she discovers that actually it may well be part of the missing Russian crown jewels. So the story is a chase. It's all about how did missing Russian crown jewels come to Ireland?
How did it?
And she goes in pursuit of this mystery, allied with her friend Mal, who lives on the bottom floor, who has secrets of his own.
Right.
And he's originally from Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
So together they become a kind of renegade spy team.
Yeah, wow.
Trying to track down the mystery.
So is the book kind of set in different time periods?
Yes, it is. And I thought about this a lot, you know, whether this would be a risk for young readers, because Ava's a contemporary girl, and obviously Molly was writing during the Civil War in 1922, 1923. So it moves back and forth.
Yeah.
And I was worried about that, I have to say. But when I showed it to some early readers, and my nephews included, they were hugely enthusiastic about this, actually. Yeah. They loved this element. So I was very pleased about that. And it always shows that, you know, not to underestimate young readers, because they understand
that. Oh, they're
very
smart. They're extremely. Kids these days.
You're telling me.
Kids these days are ridiculously smart, aren't they? They'll see any sort of little plot hole or something. They're there and they're telling you.
Well, you're absolutely right about that, because when I was last year, I came over to film with the girls in St. John of God's primary school in Artane, and they'd all read Molly's Diary, and luckily for me, they loved it. So I had a great time with them. They're absolutely wonderful girls, really fantastic. And one of them asked me about a minor character, and she said, "You never said what happened to her at the end." And I thought, oh my gosh, they're so sharp, because I actually debated about whether I should say what did happen to me.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, she's quite a minor character, so maybe nobody will be interested. But I was so wrong.
Nope. My kids,
I tell you, they're on it. But I can reassure them that that May actually plays quite a large role in Ava's Diary.
Okay.
So she obviously survived, and she lived to tell the tale, and she gets caught up in the mystery in the period of the Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, kind of writing about that time period, was there a lot of research? I mean, do you know what I mean? Especially with things from a certain time period, you must have to do your research and make sure things are as they actually were in the time, in case you get people coming to you saying, "This is a load of lies." Do you know what I mean?
Oh, well, you do. And you get people saying, "They wouldn't have used that word in those days."
Oh, God, that's very precise.
I know. It's scary, but it's good in a way, because it keeps you on your toes. But obviously that whole period of Irish history is very iconic. You know, it's, you know, this is, everybody yes. knows the whole, there's lots of mysteries within it as well. Mm. So, for example, the death of Michael Collins in Baile na Blore. Well, you know, there's been more ink spilt in that, you know, than any comparable assassination, you know.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you have to be really, really careful what you say about it and how you tell the story. And yes, I do a lot of research. I have a degree in history, and in the past I have also made some history programs. So
yeah.
I love that part of it. I absolutely love that, but it's also not to get bogged down in it as well. Mm. So I usually start with the idea, and I start writing, and then when I
sort of tweak it
exactly, or reach a hole, and I think actually I need to make sure I get that right. But it's also about getting the timeline correct and making sure that you've got the right things happening at the right time, you know, so that, and you're not distorting the mood or the sense of what was going on. But yes, it is a challenge, but it's a great challenge. And we're very lucky in Ireland because so many people wrote.
Yeah. It's extremely well documented, isn't it? All that kind of period, you know, 1916 to like 1925. It's so well documented.
Astonishing. And you've got this amazing archive, which was compiled by the Irish Bureau of Military History, where in the late 20s, 30s, they started to go around and start recording the testimony of people who were involved from 1916. Now, they stopped just before the Civil War because it was all still too raw and bitter. But you do have this astonishing collection of records, of first-hand accounts of people being in caught up in the conflict, whether it was 1916, even before that, belonging to the Fianna, being in the War of Independence, and it's so vivid.
Mm.
Some of them are polished, you know, people have been obviously telling the anecdotes over the years, but there's a real knob of truth in a lot of those accounts, and I read those a lot because I find that I feel it's like the people talking to me.
It must make things a little bit easier as well. Obviously, as we said, things are so well documented.
Yes,
it must make your life a million times easier than it would be.
Well, easier and harder
if you were starting from scratch. Do you know what I mean?
True, it's easier than starting from scratch, but it does make it easier in the sense that you've got a wealth of material.
Mm.
But there's also quite a lot of gaps.
Yeah,
and also the wealth of the material can almost be overwhelming. So sometimes you need to find a through line, and then very often what I'm writing about can be sort of hidden from history. So very often the child's eye view. It's missing from history because generally if they do, they don't write the history books there and then anyway.
Yeah,
And they get kind of written out. So I found, for example, I found very useful is to look at photographs. And what I found very interesting, when you look at any photographs of that period, there's always the kid, you know, like, you know, bombing the photo. That didn't start now. You know,
they've always been doing it.
Some little gurrier is in the back of the shot, you know, behind Michael Collins, or there's Countess Markovitz. Yeah, exactly. There's four girls running, you know, waving. So they're there, you know, and you can see them, and it gives you a sense of what the kids are like. And you can see a lot of them aren't wearing shoes, or, you know, that they're all smiling. So they're, even for them, there was a sense that sometimes with this disruption, there's an edge of excitement to it as well, you know. So it's, I find that very useful.
Yeah, I mean, why that time period in particular? What kind of drew you to this particular time in history? How did that all kind of come together initially?
Well, it came about, first of all, because the publisher Paula Campbell from Poolbeg was wanting to revive doing more history books and children's books, and she herself has young children, and we were talking about it, and she did mention 1916 is coming up, you know, it'd be nice to have a title for that period, but she wasn't saying, you know, write something about it.
Hint.
But immediately something came into my head. I immediately had this vision of a little girl, Molly, just arbitrarily called her, and she had two pigtails streaming behind her. And she was running across the road to the GPO. And I was wondering, why is she there? What's happening?
What's her story?
And what's she going to see? Yeah. And suddenly I was away with that. But I do think that the sort of deeper pull for me was I went to school in Mountjoy Street, to secondary school, and I thought it was great. I get the bus in every day, you know. This is me, you know. And after school, I used to love wandering the streets of Dublin. Yeah. I'd tell my mother I was going to homework classes or netball practice, and I would just walk around.
Oh my God.
I know.
You wouldn't get away with that now, would you?
No,
your mother would be on the phone saying,
exactly.
Where are you?
Yeah, I know. You'd be texting, oh, the bus is delayed. How many times can that excuse work?
Oh
no.
God.
But I would, I mean, I didn't do it all the time. But
yeah.
I did grow to love Dublin. And I was, you know, Dublin is such a historic city. And literally, there's no other city where the history is so hardwired into the very stones.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a sense, it's very vivid. And people are Irish people are very vivid storytellers. So you'll always get people who had memories and stories, and indeed my own grandfather, who's the character Dan of Dan's Diary, is based on. He was a great footballer. He played for Ireland.
Oh, right.
And he was a member of the Fianna Boy Scouts during the War of Independence. And he used to tell me all these vivid stories about running messages and burying guns down in Ringsend Park. And, you know, maybe running messages for Michael Collins. It might have been.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
But, my grandparents were great storytellers and great talking about it. And so I think that period fused for me as a very exciting. And it's also, you know, I read history at university.
Yeah.
It is the fulcrum of what happened, you know, modern Ireland.
Mm.
So it's such a blazingly interesting period of history.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm a big advocate of people talk, you know, people don't talk to their grandparents enough about, you know, what was it like when they were kids? What, you know, what did they go through? I'm sure a lot of people's grandparents have these most amazing stories, but they've just never, it's never kind of come up in conversation, or do you know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. And oral history.
And family history as well.
Totally. And particularly about that period, a lot of the stories were kind of buried in families.
Mm.
And particularly about the Civil War.
Mm.
Because the Civil War was so divisive, and you literally had brother against brother.
Yeah.
And sister against brother. And, you know, even literally people signing the death warrant on their best
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
And the gun that, you know, Erskine Childers, the gun that he was arrested for that led to his execution was given to him by Michael Collins, who was from the other side. You know,
that's
so
crazy, isn't
there's
it?
All these there's all these very near raw emotional stories. And there was terrible things happened in the Civil War. There was war crimes happened in the Civil War.
Mm.
So particularly in areas, for example, like Kerry, people didn't talk about it because it was so painful, so raw. And a lot of this trauma, in a way, has got buried in families, and
as
the stories are told within families. But like one of the great things about the commemoration last year was it seemed to provide a space for people to start talking about these things in a more open and honest way. And that's good. And equally, people's parents grandparents or great-grandparents might have been fighting in World War One.
Mm.
And it's very important to remember that strand of history too.
Well, that's the thing. Kids are learning about it in school. Do you know what I mean? They could be going home saying, oh, we're learning about 1916. You know, what were you doing in 1916? Were you involved in the rising? Or, what was going on? I mean, so yeah, people, talk to your grandparents. If you still got your grandparents, go and talk to them and find out. You know, it's just, there must be the most amazing stories.
Totally.
Untold stories.
Yeah, yeah.
That they kind of think, oh, it's not.
It's not
relevant. It's not that exciting.
Yeah.
I won't, you know, but it could be an
amazing
story. Exactly.
They would, you know, there'd be stories about, you know, when electricity came. Obviously electricity's been around since the 20s, but, you know, they mightn't remember the story, but they might have a story from their grandparents.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a sort of
lineage. Kids are so reliant, aren't they, on technology now. I'd say kids today couldn't even imagine not having a phone or without TVs or anything like that. And it's just, you know, it's something they probably couldn't comprehend.
Well, I don't think they can even comprehend what, say, my life was like growing up without computers.
Yeah. Having to physically go to the library to do your homework.
Yes.
And find the information from books and then physically, you know, writing everything out. And kids today, it's just like, Google.
Yeah, it's on tap. Yes.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder
get lost.
What does the future hold?
Yes, indeed.
So it's kind of worrying, really, I suppose, when you kind of think about it.
Well, worrying in one way, but in another way, what I've discovered, certainly in relation to this young generation, is that partly because they do have this feeling of access to technology, they've got very open minds.
Yeah.
And they've got sort of bigger imaginations in a way. So they're not kind of fazed by the idea of something going on abroad or, you know, they literally are plugged in, you know, in a way perhaps that previous generations weren't. And I've been so, I have actually, frankly been blown away by the reaction of this particular young generation, sort of 7 to, you know, 13, 14 year olds. They are so on it. You know,
my so 4-year old nephew, he's swiping it.
Wow.
It's just like a natural, do you know what I mean? It's like they've been born with this swiping. Yeah. They try and swipe anything, even if it's not swipeable. He's there trying to, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah, I saw a picture. There was somebody put something up on YouTube before of a baby with a magazine trying to swipe the photographs.
Oh, dear. So let's talk a bit more about this book, this amazing book. So how long did it take from sort of the original concept to having a finished book in your hand?
Well, they generally take me about a year, I'd say. Okay. Molly's Diary took slightly less.
That's pretty good going.
It's pretty good going. I suppose I'd started thinking about Ava's diary before that, really, almost when I started writing Molly's diary. My mind started to think ahead. So it's probably writing took about a year. Well, somewhere between, probably about a year. And then there's the editing process as well. Maybe more like 18 months, really, before, you know, it's ready to go into the shops, you know.
Yeah. I mean, another thing, your characters in the book, do you have a process for creating your characters? Do you use real people to kind of base characters on and then shape them to what you need?
Generally, I find with the characters that the characters seem to arrive.
Make themselves?
They do. They seem to arrive fully formed in my head. And very quickly, I see them. I get a visitation.
I see people.
I'm haunted by my own characters. They arrive
That's great, though, isn't it? It just kind of takes the work.
They pop in like toast, you know.
Yeah.
And there they are. Now, I don't necessarily know much about them, but then a sort of process of kind of question and answer.
Yeah.
I sort of think, how does this character feel? Oh, she feels about 12, you know. And I kind of get a picture of it. So then it's always like, how do I relate to that?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes I forget their hair colour and things like that. Right. I have to go back and check that I've been consistent, you know. But generally the characters are very vivid for
me.
Okay. And I tend to, then I sometimes borrow, I might borrow elements of somebody I know or something like that. With the historical characters, the real characters, I try to be faithful to what they were like.
Yeah, yeah.
I try, when I'm using their words and so on, I try to use words that they were documented as saying.
Yeah.
But sometimes I, you know, imagine a conversation, but I try to stay within. So I do research them in a bit more detail, so to make sure that I'm kind of true to them. And I look at photographs. I'm quite a visual person, I think. I worked in television for a long time. I'm by trade a documentary maker. And I think visual images really help me a lot. And so I do get, if I get a sense of, you know, what they were like as people. Like, for example, say somebody like Michael Collins. Michael Collins had ferocious energy for a start, but he was also a great man for horseplay. And he used to wrestle people. I mean, you don't normally get that sense of historical character, but you know what I mean? He would have wrestling matches with, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So he was really obviously quite boisterous, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you kind of try and you think, oh, that's a real, you know, vivid detail about somebody, and you want to try and capture that element of their personality. Or, you know, when I was a part of Ava's diary where Molly writes the letter about the Women's Peace Delegation, and she meets Maud Gonne and Charlotte Despard, who are the two women who are trying to broker a peace deal to stop the civil war during the week of fighting in Dublin. And Maud Gonne was, you know, famously one of the most beautiful women that Yeats broke his heart melodiously for, you know, you know, she was his idea of beauty like a tightened bow. And I mean, you look at the photographs and she had a certain kind of statuesque, old fashioned femme fatale aura about her. But when I read about her, I read that she used to wear like an enormous amount of black veils and things like that. But she had a little dog. And her little dog was called Wuzzo Wuzzo. And I just thought this was like a little detail about her, you know, that she might have this little puppy, you know, this little dog with her, this tiny little lap dog, really. And I also found a recording of her, her voice. And she had a very musical voice. And she was also, there was a lot of energy in her. So, you know, she wasn't just this portrait, you know, right. sort of reclining on the chaise longue, you know what I mean?
She's a colourful character.
She's a colourful character. So, yeah, I find that, I do find that interesting. I find that interesting.
I mean, what would you say is most important to you? Do you think a good story is the most important? Or would you say having strong characters who will basically lead the story? What would you kind of, if you had to choose kind of between characters and story, what would be the most kind of like, you think, right, I need to have a good, strong story and then the character, you know, do you know what I mean?
I'm going to sound like a fence sitter now, but I actually think it is the marriage of the two.
Right, yeah.
So strong characters and a strong story.
Yeah.
And for me, a lot of it is about story as well, because the character will attract the reader, as it were, and they'll identify with the reader, but the story will keep them in the text, if you know what I mean. It's like,
yeah,
that's no, I mean, you're what's talking getting about, you turning the pages.
Talk about visual images and stuff. No, I mean, most books, you're reading a book and you've got a story playing in your head. You've got this, do you know what I mean? It's playing in your mind as well as when you're reading it, your mind is imagining scenarios and imagining characters so you can kind of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Maybe it's just me that does that.
No, I think you're right. I think what happens, and I know I'm the same as a reader, it's almost like it sets off spools of a film in my head.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens, you know, you create, like, in a way the book is only half the job.
Yeah,
it's not anything until the reader comes to the book, and what you want to do is create a relationship with the reader and with the text so that the reader enters the world of the story, as it were. And you obviously don't say everything, like you obviously don't have to say she took four paces to the door and she turned the handle and she went down. I mean, people get that bit. So you're trying to give people vivid details that where their own imagination will supply the rest of it.
Yeah.
So you don't want to labour it too much. But obviously with historical fiction, as you said earlier, that you do have to supply a certain amount of, you know, sort of scenery and you know, and just rooting it in the time and a certain amount of orientation so people realise they're in the past and they are getting
kind of set the story,
you know, they're not getting the Lewis as it were,
well,
you know,
no, like,
but they are getting a tram, so it's the same thing, you know, it's a similar thing. It is a very interesting, it's a very interesting question about which it's almost like the chicken and egg thing. Is it story or is it character? Because there are some novels which nothing happens almost, and you know, but the character is so strong, you just go with it. And equally, some characters, some books are just pure story. So I think one without the other is a bit flat in a way, can be flat. So, I do work hard to get the story elements in place, to get the beats, as it were, because I feel you owe it to the reader, you know, to keep up the momentum,
Definitely.
And particularly for young readers, because I think character is very important, but I think for young readers, story probably is more important than for adult readers, because they you know, because they have to read so many things for school. You know, I don't know what books they have in the Irish education system, but in England they've got like Biff and Chip, and Biff and Chip do this, Biff and Chip do that, and actually some of them are very, very exciting, and they're, you know, but there's a recognition now that you do have to hook children in with something happening. Yeah. And I find that. I mean, I find that with my daughter.
Well, you hear all these, like, you know, oh, I'm being forced to read this book. It looks, do you know what I mean? I've no interest in it, but I've got to read it because my teacher's told me I've got to do it.
Yes, quite.
But it's kind of that little aspect to it, which is kind of, you know, you're not going to get...
It's a chore.
You're not going to get every kid liking the same book. Do you know what I mean? That's the beauty of children's fiction.
Well, it is, and luckily there's millions of them.
You know, there's
you know, but what I find with children is if they get interested in something, they won't only read one book on it, they'll read loads.
Yeah.
So if you get them hooked on, say, historical fiction,
they'll
read loads, read reams of historical fiction because it excites their imagination. And I think for children's audience, I think inspiring their imagination is very important.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So that it becomes vivid and that they can think themselves into the narrative, as it were. So I think that's part of the challenge.
Yeah. So I mean, talking about kids, I mean, has writing always been a kind of natural thing for you? Was it just a natural, you know, when you were a kid, you love writing and it's just kind of taken the path to where you're at now?
Oh, very much so. I'm very much a storyteller ever since I was very small, and I come from a sort of family of storytellers. Like, we all spend a lot of time sitting around in the kitchen drinking tea. Oh, this happened, that happened, yeah, you know, and then, like, you know, 6 hours later.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I've always enjoyed writing, and I'm the eldest of six children, and I think having lots of brothers and sisters gave me a real incentive to tell stories, because I used to kind of do it as a form of crowd control. So I used to enjoy telling stories to my brothers and sisters. And when I was very young, my sister was a sleepwalker, and so we used to share a bedroom, because she there was always the risk that she'd get out of bed. And at one stage we were in a double bed, because I had to make sure she didn't get out of bed.
Yeah.
And my younger brother, and he used to come in and sit at the bottom of the bed. So I used to tell them stories, and I'd tell them these follow your uppers every night.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So I got into this.
They're coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I used to do. I have this big saga about this imaginary family called the Woodbine family.
Right. So just keeping that local aspect as well.
And there's the main character was called Brains, you know, and he was like an inventor and all this stuff. So I would tell the story about this boy and his brothers and sisters and what have you, and my brothers and sisters would come and listen to these stories.
It's like something out of the Beano, do you know what I mean? It's like this. Are you fairly disciplined? I mean, a lot of authors, they have to be disciplined, you know, you're working to deadlines, time frames, all this kind of stuff. Are you one of these people that says, right, today I need to sit down between 9 and 5, get a certain amount done? Or, you know, how do you work as an author?
I'm disciplined, partly because I have to be. I have a young daughter, and I have, like, it's like a guillotine. You know, she goes out the door to school, and then, you know, it's game over. Yep. Like, when she comes
Let's
home
get
from
working.
School. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm like a soldier. I have to get up to my post. And, you know, I've got other things going on as well. So I have to be very specific about what I'm doing.
Mm.
And I try to be disciplined. It's not always feasible. It's not always possible. But when I'm in the kind of thick of the writing, I do aim to get a certain word count.
Mm.
You know, word count is my friend.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And I'm not too, I just get it down on paper, because you can't edit something you haven't got down on paper.
Yeah.
So for me, the main thing is to try and get the story out initially.
Right. Yeah.
And I also trained as a journalist. And I've worked in television,
right,
so I'm very conscious of time, as you probably are too, Paula. You know, so you've got this, like, you know that it is game over at a certain time. You just have to get it done. It can't always be perfect.
Yeah.
And so I think that helps, actually, because I think that is actually what blocks a lot of people, that they feel it almost has to be perfect on the page before.
Or if
they
you're I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do a bit tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow comes, you're like, oh, I've got this to do today. I'll do it tomorrow.
It's true.
And it's just, you know, putting off things.
Yeah.
It's not going to help your career as an author.
And, I mean, somebody was talking to me yesterday about creative writing. They said something like, if you write 500 words a day, you would have 2 novels by the end of the year.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and I mean, 500 words is not a lot.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
But, and again, you don't have to write, you know, masses every day. Some days, if you're not kind of in the mood, you can go over what you have done.
Mm.
Or again, and this is where I'm lucky in a way, I can always be researching.
Yeah, yeah.
So I read as well. So I consider that all part of the writing day, as it were.
Mm.
But I generally try to be disciplined. I mean, I'm not always, you know, I can't pretend I'm not human. I was going to say,
you're human. Everyone, you know.
Exactly. And life happens, you know, things happen in the middle of things. So you can't always, but if you see it as a job, like as something that you have to get done, well, you just do it, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's an appointment, and you make the appointment with yourself. And I've got little sort of things I do. I mean, if I can't seem to be progressing with the story, I'm saying, oh, well, then obviously I'm stuck with the story.
Mm.
So I'll say, write out all the, I'll do post-it notes. I love post-it
notes. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Chapter headings on post-it notes and say, you know, where's the storyline going?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Things like that. So there's always things you can do, you know, to keep the pot boiling.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great, you know, tips for, we've always got, you know, listeners emailing in and phoning in saying that they'd love to write a book, but they either don't have the discipline, or they just don't know where to start. Do you know what I mean? It's so difficult just to, how do I even begin to put a book together?
Well, I got great advice when I was at film school from my scriptwriting tutor. And she said, do you know how you start a script? we were talking about a script, she said, you sit down and you type act one. And I could give you the same advice for writing. You sit down and you write chapter one.
Yeah.
And that is how you start.
Right.
It's that simple. And what you do is you write. And it does. One piece of advice I give to people is it's like a muscle. Okay.
Right, okay.
So you have to kind of limber up the muscle.
Yeah.
So I would advise just buying some cheap notebooks, you know, those Aisling books,
you know,
you buy them in the supermarket, and getting a stack of them. And every morning, making a writing appointment to write for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't matter what you write. You can write, I hate sitting here writing in this stupid notebook.
I suppose it's about making muscle memory.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my dog is barking. And, you know, and things like that. And then you just start writing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you just get the flow.
Mm.
So then that gives you, as you say, muscle memory. Of taking stuff out of your head through your arms, onto a page.
And like everyone's got their own story. Do you know what I mean? We've got individuals, we all have our own stuff going on in our lives. And you know, there must be countless stories out there that are just waiting to be told.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're all very important. I mean, and even if they never see the light of day as a book, that's something there for your family, your own ancestors.
Yeah, no, you're saying about get onto your grandparents, people, even your parents. I mean, it's only recently that I've kind of been saying to my parents, what finding out about my grandparents and what they did for jobs and stuff, which I'd never known before. But you don't think about it when your grandparents, like my grandparents are not with us, unfortunately, but I never thought then to ask them all the questions, and now they're not there to answer the questions, so it's kind of lost history.
Indeed it is. It's probably not necessarily all lost. You know, there's a sort of, as you say, hidden history.
Yeah.
So some of it is with your parents.
Yeah.
There's always shards and you know, little relics and monuments and so on. And this can prompt things. Like, for me, for one of the cues, in a way, for Ava's diary was about the Civil War. And I wanted to write it in a way that it didn't, wasn't too depressing for a young audience. Because the Civil War was such a bitter, traumatic bloodletting, really, and it was such a terrible end in a way to all this hope and optimism that people did have about having a new Ireland, and whatever you think about whether you know it was justified to have violence or not, but there was a mood in the country that there was a need to have a new start, but the Civil War was a very sort of bitter kind of opening to that, to the birth of the nation, as it were. And I didn't want to write it in a very, depressing way for children. So therefore, that was one of the reasons why I thought having a contemporary lens on it would help.
Yeah.
Because if you can see that, you know, we're not really still fighting the Civil War.
Yeah.
Okay, there's still elements, but,
yeah.
you know, that and there has been, you know, hopefully Brexit won't ruin it, but there has been some kind of resolution to what was going on in Northern Ireland. So, I wanted to give that perspective, to give a kind of long perspective to it, and also to show that it is relevant. You know, just because it happened in the past doesn't mean you sweep it under the carpet.
Well, I was thinking, it's a story, but you're also educating the children as well, as to, you know, an Irish history, obviously, is still as relevant today as it's always been, even more.
Indeed.
As I said, with the centenary and stuff
indeed.
Happening.
And also children are looking at what happens in Syria and so on, and they're thinking about civil war and what's going on in the world. And to, you know, explain to a young audience that these things happen in all kinds of countries. It's not, they're not freakish.
Yeah.
But one of the cues for me was that there's kind of living memories. There's sort of shards of memory left over in memorials and so on. So it so happened that with two of my sisters, one of my sisters lives in Beaumont, and I saw a plaque to commemorate boys who had been abducted and killed during the Civil War in Yellowwall, in Yellow Lane.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that prompted me to find out about them. And also my sister, who lives in Killarney, lives near a monument on Countess Road to what was a massacre.
Right.
Of five Republican prisoners were blown up, and miraculously one of them survived.
Yeah.
And it was like these things lodged in my memory, and I seeing them, and you kind of wanted to know what the stories were.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was atrocities on both sides by both the Free State and the Republican side.
Yeah.
But there was a particular brutality to the Civil War that, you know, finding these monuments made me think about, you know. So there's things, you know, there's cues all around us.
Yeah. No, it's just definitely a story that needs to be told, and you know, kids need to know what people went through back for them to have what they have now. Yes. But yeah, so thank you so, so much for coming in today, Patricia. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today.
A pleasure talking to you too, Paula.
Cool. So Patricia Murphy's brand new book, The Irish Civil War, 1922-23, Ava's Diary, published by the lovely guys at Paul Begg. So go out and get yourself a copy, and then, you know, you can read the other books as well.